Blog Talk Radio.
BangTheBook.com. All right, well, welcome in, everybody, to the first edition of the Greyhound Gambling Report for the 2015 season. My name is Adam Burke. Joining me, as always, BangTheBook.com writer, personality, and football aficionado, Mr. Cole Ryan. Cole, how's it going today, buddy?
Excellent. I'm glad to be back, and I'm glad to see that we're starting things off right and getting ready for a great season.
Oh, absolutely. It's perfect to start things out on a high note with switchboard problems. You know, it will take us some time to get fully into the swing of things here, as it is the preseason for us as well. But, you know, obviously we've got a lot of great things to talk about. If you haven't listened to the shows that we did with the season win totals, I believe, was that all the way back in May already? May or early
absolutely.
June?
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
But if you haven't listened to those, make sure you check those out. A lot of those thoughts still very relevant. Win total numbers haven't moved a ton. You know, so far so good on the major injury front, but you know, long shelf life on those, and you know, I thought we had a lot of great information with that. So, I guess first and foremost, how's your summer going, man?
It's going great. There's been a lot going on. I've been doing a lot of things, but I'll tell you what, nothing excites me like this time of year. I almost, you know, feel like a bear coming out of hibernation. And I love baseball, and of course, the end of basketball last season. But I love football, and even just preparing to be back on the air with you was a good feeling again. And like you said, for those who haven't listened, obviously I'm a tad biased, but I love this show and I love what we do every week, and we're trying out some great things this year. And so I'm just really looking forward to the kickoff of not only football but this show.
Yeah, we definitely are. We were talking last week, going over some possible new segments for the show. We're definitely going to add a daily fantasy football component for this season. You know, obviously daily fantasy sports are just taking over the world right now. And, you know, we're going to include some of that. Of course, we'll be in the Super Contest again this year. We'll talk a little bit more about the Super Contest later in the show, what it is, what it entails, you know, how we did last season. And then, you know, I mean, it's going to be a work in progress for a little while we do try to come up with a format that works best for us. We will bring back the rapid fire rundown at the end of the show where we've got picks on every other game that we haven't talked about. You know, all the news and notes that you need to know, betting lines, forecasting the lines. We're probably going to switch to a Tuesday recording for this season. Last year it was on Thursday. So with Tuesday, we'll be able to talk more about where lines will go. You know, obviously it'll be a little bit tougher if there's a late week injury, something like that. You know, it may change one of our picks, but that's what Twitter's made for. You can follow me on Twitter at Scanning Tripods. You can follow Cole on Twitter at ColeRyan9. I know he does a lot of great stuff with football season. Cole, you know, as you just mentioned, love baseball. Obviously, I do the Bettors Box, my MLB betting podcast. So, you know, I'm still in a baseball mindset for the most part. But how do you make that transition over to starting your football research, which, frankly, everyone should have started by now already?
Well, I'll be honest with you, it's a full-time job. I mean, everybody has a vacation this summer or tries to, and it really depends. If you're not deep in the weeds in baseball, you know, I'm not as deep as you are. You do a fantastic job, by the way, with your podcast, Bettors Box. But I am a fan of the sport, and I watch it, and I get into that sport as well. But like you said, starting with football really begins back in May. That's kind of why we did those shows early in the spring, because you could still think about the draft and the changes that your team has made, or any team has made for that matter. And then, of course, free agents play a big role. And now even with training camps kicking off, you know, it's time to get back into action, so to speak, and to start breaking down the teams and see what you've missed and what you haven't missed. And you and I, even catching up over the last couple of days, have talked about transactions and injuries, and inevitably one of us has gone, wow, I didn't even know that happened. So let's get going, you know. So it's a constant grind. And if you didn't start a long time ago, that's okay. That's what we're here for. We're here to get you back up to speed and going.
Yeah, that was one of the great things about those shows back in May, is that we did cover the draft. You know, we did have some thoughts on free agency, you know, because there's a lot of player movement in the NFL. You know, it is a salary cap league, but, you know, with the way that contracts are structured, you know, there are guys up for free agency year after year. You know, so there are always big free agent classes, a lot of moves to be wary of. And, No, I mean that is what the preseason is all about. You know, it is making sure that you understand who is where, you know, which teams have changed coaches. I know we talked a lot about coaching changes on those shows. Coordinator changes, those are things that people often overlook. But, you know, I mean, it is a full-time job. You're absolutely right. And, you know, I mean, it obviously depends on how much you're betting per game, what your bankroll size is, things of that sort. You know, but as Cole said, this is going to be a tremendous resource for you. You know, we will give out picks on every game because, you know, we know that there are sections of the listener base that want that. But ultimately, this is an informational podcast, and that's what I really love about this show.
Yeah, you know, our goal is, we talked about it last year, our goal is really to educate. And that's why I said if it's not too late, it's still time to get involved. But, I mean, we talk about some of the things that you won't get on your normal NFL podcast. And, you know, I understand what the people want. We talk about they want picks and they want information. But we try to get deep and talk about things. Because like you said, everybody's going to be talking about big name players moving teams. We understand that. But what about the offensive lineman that signed on a team? What about, you know, the offensive coordinator that signed on a team? Those are things, like you said, that are back page news but can make front page difference.
Well, speaking of front page news, a lot of that to talk about here. We're going to go over some of the important headlines so far from the preseason. You know, they're going to talk about some of the preseason questions, how they may influence a team's perception, you know, going into both the preseason and the regular season. You know, I know a lot of people that make good amounts of money in the preseason because they pay attention to Twitter, pay attention to the beat writers. They know how long the starters are playing. You can get those edges in the preseason. You know, during the season, obviously the starters are playing as long as they're able to walk, you know, or use their arms. You know, so it's a little bit of a difference there. But, you know, the biggest story of the offseason continues to be this Deflategate scandal that absolutely will not go away. Tom Brady, his 4-game suspension upheld. The appeal, I believe I saw today, is going to be August 12th with Brady and Roger Goodell in attendance. Doesn't really seem like this suspension is going to be reduced, but, you know, and I was looking, wrote up an AFC Championship futures article yesterday. The Patriots were still plus 400 at BetDSI to win the AFC. So, you know, even with the suspension, it doesn't really seem like people are all that worried about the Patriots for this season.
Well, you know, like you, this story has me a bit worn down. I mean, I won't be, you know, watching any proceedings or getting too deep as far as, you know, who's talking about what. Again, I'm just beat to death with it. I will, however, want to know the outcome, whether the suspension is reduced and what changes from the outcome as far as if he'll play more games or less games and how that goes. Now, the interesting thing is that, like you said, they're not undervaluing the Patriots. A lot of people are going, yeah, so what, 4 games? And so what, we'll be back and the Patriots will be ready to go and Brady's Brady. The good news and what you read a lot about is that everybody's saying this is the chip on the shoulder the Patriots needed because they don't want to have that Super Bowl hangover, and this is what will keep them motivated. A lot of intangibles in there. As people may know, listened to our earlier shows, you and I have a couple other teams in the AFC East that we're looking at to have big seasons. So I'm not really sold on those odds being okay where they're at. To me, they should be a little more slightly adjusted. But the Patriots are Super Bowl champs. They're a public team. They're going to get a lot of action. That's probably going to offset any big moves on this line because it's not going to get any worse for Brady. It's either going to be kept at 4 or obviously lowered. But it will be interesting, and we'll talk about this later, how you focus on the preseason, because the Patriots themselves are going to have a different focus on preseason because they have to get used to life without Brady.
Yeah, you know, and I think it's a really interesting way to look at it because oftentimes in the preseason we see the starting quarterback throw maybe 5-6 passes in the first game. You know, he probably plays a series, maybe 2 if they have a quick 3-and-out, you know, something like that. Will the Patriots have to change the way they go about things now with Jimmy Garoppolo presumably having to start the first 4 games of the season? You know, I mean, we talked about it back in May that New England is fortunate in that, you know, their bye week is included in there. They play the Steelers at home to start the season. They go to Buffalo. They play Jacksonville, which, you know, they could probably trot you or I out there quarterback and beat Jacksonville. Then they play at Dallas. You know, of course, Brady conveniently comes back for that game against the Colts on October 18th in primetime. You know, so New England may be in okay shape, but that is a great point to make and something that we'll have to watch throughout the preseason is, you know, you've got Jimmy Garoppolo and Matt Flynn in there. how does this change the way that they approach the preseason? Because you can't afford to get Garoppolo hurt, and especially not Flynn, because then who knows who's your backup?
Sure, and you know, that's something I really, really want to pay attention to, because let's get a little deeper. You know, this should put more focus on the Patriots' running backs. Are they still going to throw 40 times a game? Are they going to have a different offensive approach to how they play football now? Is he going to run more? I mean, there's so many intangibles to how they're going to run this offense. Obviously, everyone has faith in Bill Belichick. He's a great coach. But it's almost like this team has to find a different identity, and they've got to find it quick going into not only the preseason, but the regular season. And you're right. How much time are you going to let Garoppolo really become a quarterback, and how much time are you going to leave him out in the field where he could get hurt, even in preseason, especially when there's a linebacker out there that's third, fourth string trying to make a name for himself, just going all out after your quarterback? There's a lot of things that people have to consider to this. Pass protection, to who your running backs are, because the Patriots lost running backs who are key veterans in the backfield. You know, the wide receivers, they're not really an elite group, but they're a group that has to step up now and help out this quarterback who's brand new, who's a rookie, who's going to make mistakes. To me, if the Patriots could even come out of this 2-2, it would be considered a success, especially with the teams that you talked about that they're playing.
Well, let's look at this Dez Bryant story here. Dez Bryant gets into a little scrap with Patman, one of the cornerbacks there. You know, a second-year guy, an undrafted guy. And Bryant comes out after the whole thing and says, you know, hey, it was basically nothing. You know, and most of the Cowboys said this as well. But when you look at Bryant, a guy who basically waited until the 11th hour, you know, to sign that deal that he wanted, you know, and then he comes in and has this little scuffle, and some of the fans at training camp are booing Bryant for his role in the whole thing. Is this a complete non-story, just something to talk about, you know, because we're still 5 days away from the first preseason game and over a week away from the rest of the teams playing?
Yes and no. Yes and no. I know that's a horrible answer, but no, because there's training camp fights all the time. I mean, they happen all the time. It's a no-brainer. The only reason this made news is because Dez Bryant was involved. But I guarantee they're happening at every NFL camp going on. So for that reason, it's not big news. But what I like to look at, and you like to look at too, that's why I love this show so much, is because we dig a bit deeper, is how really Jerry Jones and how the Cowboys in general reacted to it. You know, there's a quote from Jerry Jones saying, hey, that's good stuff, and that's training camp, and that shows they're emotional. And then, you know, they go on to report that it was pretty heated, and they yelled at each other, and then they hugged each other. But what I really liked is how they approached Dez Bryant. I mean, let's think about it. It's a $70 million investment now, so it's a big deal. So maybe in the past somebody might have came up and said, oh, he needs to grow up, or, you know, they would have went straight into damage control. Now it's almost like they have no choice but to be almost supportive of everything he does and turn it and spin it into a great thing, because they've got so much invested. They can't come out now and say, yeah, he's immature, he needs to grow up a little bit. Not that this is the case. Like I said, this happens every time, but it was almost a different approach to Dez Bryant. It was he's our guy, and look at him, he's a fiery competitor, as opposed to, yeah, I need some work, he probably should have been a bit mature and walked away. So to me, the approach to Dez Bryant, who we know is going to make headlines one way or another throughout the season, was a bit interesting to watch When I read this story. That's what I took out of it.
Yeah, that's exactly what I took out of it as well. I mean, the narrative changes. You know, if he's the second year talented guy, you know, like the corner was, you know, then it's a completely different story. It's, you know, hey, this guy needs to grow up. You know, we're happy with the veteran leadership that we have on this team that can, you know, prop him up and teach him how to go about his business. But yeah, I mean, they're posting video of the fight on their official Twitter account. I mean, they're practically promoting it. And yeah, that was fascinating to watch to me. And I kind of wonder, you know, maybe I'm grasping at straws here. I'm drawing a conclusion that's not there. But when you look at this Dallas Cowboys offense without DeMarco Murray now, you know, it's going to be on the passing game. They've got a great offensive line, and you know, Joseph Randle or whoever else can run behind them. But, you know, there's going to be more emphasis on Romo, more emphasis on Bryant here. And I kind of, you know, I mean, I'm only 28. But, you know, it sort of brought me back to the days when they had guys like Michael Irvin, you know, and they even cited Michael Irvin when they were talking about the fight, saying, you know, hey, this is things that happen all the time when, you know, they were America's team in the 90s. It seems to me like they're trying to create an identity for this team. And that worries me a little bit, because if they're coming into the season without an identity, You know, this could be one of those back to 8 and 8 years for Jason Garrett.
Well, and I, you know, you brought up them feeding him Twitter. It was almost like they said, look, this is going to be all over social media, so why don't we take advantage of it? And you're right, it was like a hype video. And I read the quote, you're talking about Michael Irving. They also mentioned Deion Sanders. Now, let's face it, Dallas Cowboys don't need any PR. They're one of the most popular teams in the league, and they're going to get the attention. But again, another team who's looking for a different kind of identity. They let DeMarco Murray go. Everybody knows what a great offensive line they have, so they should be able to run about it. I think this puts more emphasis on Tony Romo, like you said. And I'll be honest with you, this team can't have those 8-8 kind of seasons anymore. This team has to be a team that automatically gets in a playoff every year because they put that plan into effect where they're going to draft offensive linemen very high. And so far it's worked out. So to me, this is the kind of season where I believe you're either going to see Tony Romo in the talk for MVP or you're going to see some changes at head coach.
Let's talk about this whole Sheldon Richardson thing, because I think this is something that's really going to affect the Jets, not just during his 4-game suspension, which came before, you know, this most recent arrest, but I think it's going to affect the Jets because, you know, you have to look at this situation and look at how much talent Sheldon Richardson has and then decide if he's worth it or not. You know, you've got a new head coach there in Todd Bowles who now has to deal with this situation. And for those that don't know what I'm talking about, Sheldon Richardson was already suspended 4 games for failing a drug test. Now, in the article that I read, it says that you have to fail it basically 3 times in order to get a 4-game suspension. So, you know, those are 3 positive tests for him. And then he gets this resisting arrest charge, basically evading police, speeding in his Bentley. Car smells of marijuana. There's a loaded gun in the back seat, including a 12-year-old who was in the traveling party, I guess I'll call it here, for Richardson. So far, no additional discipline from the team. He has a court date for the resisting arrest charge. But, you know, already, poor Todd Bowles. You know, he's walking into a situation where he's got a football team that's not very good. He has a major quarterback problem on his hands. He already has a problem with his offensive coordinator saying that Geno Smith is going to be the starting quarterback. And now he adds this on top of the pile.
Yeah, welcome to New York. I mean, first of all, this story is tragic. I mean, it's awful when you see this kind of talent. And I've heard many different things. I've read the New York media reports on this. And if you've ever had the entertaining privilege of going through some of the New York media, you get to see this story twisted and written in so many different ways, it almost gets laughable at a point. But Richardson is a talent. I mean, the guy, 2013 Defensive Rookie of the Year, Pro Bowl kind of guy. So, unfortunately, in the NFL, when you have that kind of talent, you get a lot more leeway. I mean, it'd be so much easier for Todd Bowles if this was, you know, fourth-string punter, if there's even such a thing in the NFL, because he'd be cut and he'd already be gone. The problem is you just don't want to let this kind of talent walk out. And like you said, they've already lost him 4 games. Rodgers not done. I mean, I wouldn't even be surprised if they come down with a hammer on this guy and get rid of him for the year. So at that point, now the team's looking to recoup maybe some money, and you get into a lot more off-the-field stuff that's boring for that matter, because you and I like to focus on the field, and I'll do it here too. This is really a test for Todd Bowles to me, because he's got to make a statement, and he's got to choose what direction that he wants his team to go in. And like I said, I read some reports where they were like, hey, good on the Jets. You know, when Richardson was out there on the field, that, you know, they're treating him like a fourth stringer where he's not getting reps with the first team, and they're kind of showing him, hey, you're a good player, but you're still going to be, you have to earn your keep on this team. But truth be told, that's not how I looked at it. I looked at it as they know they're not going to have this guy. So why are they going to let this guy get first team reps or even get close to the, you know, starting lineup when they know they're not going to have him? So it really depends on how you look at it. You and I both like Todd Bowles. I think he's a great coach. I think he's a great hire for this team, and he's a great defensive mind. So I think the Jets will be okay. This really is an unfortunate incident. It's the kind of incident where you just want to make sure that Richardson is okay and that his head's in the right place. I know he's got a lot of support from his teammates, a lot of support from the leadership there, so that's important. But from an X's and O's standpoint, they're going to lose this guy for at least half the season. It's not the whole season, which is a shame because the Jets – seem to be heading in the right direction. You know, they obviously still need a lot of work, but they seem to be heading in a positive direction. And this is just a smear for a team who wanted nothing but good news this year.
Yeah, I mean, if I remember correctly, you know, you and I weren't very high in the Jets, you know, during our shows back in May. This is a team that still needs a lot of work, specifically on the offensive side of the ball. And, you know, their defense is their strength. I mean, they gave up over 400 points last year, but they got no help from the offense whatsoever. And you take away a guy like Richardson and now Muhammad Wilkerson, you know, he's got a little bit of a hamstring problem here during the first week of training camp. They don't expect it to linger, but you and I know better than that, that these are things, you know, I mean, you're talking about a 300 and some odd pound guy. You know, I mean, a hamstring injury isn't exactly going to heal itself too quickly. And if it does, you know, there's a higher chance of recurrence, all that. So the Jets are already off to a very bad start here. And, you know, they've got a tricky schedule. They do have the Browns in week one, you know, so that should be a winnable game. But, you know, in looking at this team for the preseason now, you know, one of the things that becomes a concern is that with Richardson already out the first four, presumably longer, you know, Wilkerson already dinged up a little bit, you know, the Jets are going to be very reluctant to lose anybody else from this defense. So I think that they're going to get guys their work and then get them out of there as quickly as possible. So I think when you're looking at Jets games, you know, maybe you look to go against them. We look to go over with them. We don't know how Todd Bowles is going to approach the preseason, which is always a concern that you have with a rookie head coach. But, you know, I think you look at the Jets and you really have to wonder, you know, what their mindset's going to be for the rest of the preseason.
Yeah, it's a different approach. I mean, obviously, when we talk about the Jets, and you brought this up, we're worried about the offense, right? We want to see if Geno Smith is consistent. So I think that's going to be the focus. But now it's a whole new ball game, so to speak, because they're going to be looking at not only more depth, because every team looks at depth in the preseason, but they're going to be looking at guys that can step up and play right now, because they have to fill holes right now. And what was their strength last year and something you could kind of rely on? I mean, if you told me before all this went down that, you know, the Jets are improving their time of possession only, I'm not even talking about scoreboard, just time of possession only, I would say that the Jets could have a decent year and maybe even get 6-7 wins. But now you throw this question mark into play along with the already Geno Smith question mark, and it could be another long season for the Jets. It all really depends. I'll be watching them in the preseason too, because I think there'll be a lot to watch when it comes to this team.
Well, let's look at this Cam Chancellor situation real quick here. I haven't looked at an update recently. I'm not sure if there is. I'll do that here while I'm talking. But you know, there have been some reports coming out of Seattle that Cam Chancellor wants a new deal, that he's willing to hold out for one. And, you know, it's always interesting to see these types of situations because, you know, the players tend to side with their teammates. You know, the front office, they – you know, sort of just kind of wait for things to play themselves out. But when you look at the Seahawks, a team with a very, very high perception for this year, a new defensive coordinator with Dan Quinn taking the head coaching job in Atlanta, to me, this seems like a distraction that they didn't really need. You know, I mean, obviously they have a ton of talent, so it's not like Chancellor missing, you know, a couple of weeks of the preseason is going to matter all that much. But, you know, it is one of those things that I guess could snowball, especially because they have such a great group, such a good core, you know, guys that they're trying to re-sign. You know, they re-signed Bobby Wagner, re-signed Russell Wilson, you know, and then this whole Chancellor thing, something about it just doesn't seem right to me.
Well, you hit the nail on the head. To me, I don't care about the preseason when it comes to guys like Cam Chancellor, who you know, one of the best safeties in the league, arguably. he's going to be fine whether he doesn't play it down. But it's that intangible. It's that, what's this going to do to the team? After a team wins a Super Bowl, and the Seahawks have been, you know, automatics in the Super Bowl since they won it, everybody wants to get paid. You know, Russell Wilson got that huge contract, a lot of guaranteed money. Bobby Wagner, somewhere in the $43 million, 22 of that being guaranteed. Of course, Marshawn Lynch, Earl Thomas, Richard Sherman. These guys have all gotten paid, so now it's Cam Chancellor's time. So what's going to happen? I mean, he signed a four-year contract extension back in 2013, so he's good through 2017. So like you said, it gives the front office enough time to go, well, you know, let's try to figure this out. Cam doesn't want that, though. He sees money. And now we see that kind of intangible. Perfect example is after Bobby Wagner signed his deal, he sent out a tweet that said, can't keep everybody. And again, it's social media, so you can read it two different ways. You know, is that a, you know, a dig, so to speak, or a troll, so to speak, at Cam Chancellor saying, hey, we can't keep everybody, bud, talk to you later. Or, as many people were reporting, is that a slam at the public who said, hey, we can't keep everybody, sorry, Bobby Wagner, and he got paid. So it's those little things that are going to start tweaking the team a little bit. And of course, everybody supports him. Richard Sherman's come out and said he's going to support him, and who wouldn't? But again, defensive players are already starting to get a bit, I don't want to say tired of answering the questions, but, you know, they had a quote from K.J. Wright, you know, during camp or during at some point where he said, man, we're losing our identity. We need him. He's our captain. And look, camp's just opened up. So if they're talking about that now and they're getting frustrated to answer these questions, to me, that's something that's going to build a little bit. Pete Carroll's been a good enough coach where I don't think it'll derail this team by any stretch, but it's definitely going to be a distraction.
Yeah, and Earl Thomas already on the physically unable to play list, the PUP list. So, you know, they were already down some safety help as it is. And, you know, maybe in the long run they're better for it because they can utilize some of their depth in these games. They can get their depth some more reps, you know, because they had secondary injuries last year that guys were forced to play through, you know, whereas maybe if they had better depth, they wouldn't have had to do that. You know, so it may help them in the long run. But, you know, we're talking about a lot of these different headline things, these now we're going to go into position battles here because there's really no point talking about the preseason lines just yet. There's only one game before our next recording next Tuesday. That'll be Sunday's Hall of Fame game, which we'll wrap up the show with. But, you know, that's why we're sort of looking into these things to give you an idea of, you know, how you need to look at situations in the preseason. I mean, really, this is a preseason 101 betting course here because, you know, every injury, every headline, all these types of things are going to cause changes to how teams approach the preseason games. You know, so that's why it's important to look at all these different angles, you know, especially in the preseason, because in the preseason, you're not really getting max effort from guys. NFL regular season, you know, if there's a big story, you know, some kind of thing like that, you know, everyone's giving max effort anyway. In the preseason, it's a lot different, and that's what makes it such a different animal. But let's look at some of the things here that may affect the team's perception going into the season. Already sort of mentioned it already, but we can go back to it here and elaborate a little bit more. But Geno Smith, given a vote of confidence from the offensive coordinator, what, a month or two ago, Todd Bowles saying, you know, no, he really needs to earn it. You know, we've got some other guys that we want to look at. You and I both know the Jets really don't have anybody to take the job over from Geno Smith right now. But with his head coach, it seems like that the leash is already pretty short.
Well, I think what you're getting here is almost like a good coach, a good coach, bad coach kind of situation. You know what I mean? We got one guy who's a stern defensive guy who's going to say, hey, you know, we want to make sure that, you know, he earns his keep. He's got a piece. Then we got an offensive coordinator, you know, in Chan Gailey, who's like, yeah, he's my guy and he's good. You're attaboy, you can do it. The good news is I'm not really sure outside of your, you know, Hall of Fame types, Aaron Rodgers and the likes. I don't know if there's anybody that's set up for a possible better season than him. You know, they go out and get Brandon Marshall. They've got Eric Decker, so he's definitely got targets. They set him up with a good offensive coordinator. They set him up with a good offense because they can run a spread with him in it. So for me, when it comes to Geno Smith, it's all about the stuff that we've already seen with him. You know, is he going to make the right decisions? It's all about placement, ball placement. You know, so far they talk about it again. I'll go into that New York media. All I'm reading is no interceptions for Geno Smith. No interception for Geno Smith. But you got to see him in live action. The game speeds up even during preseason. But they set him up to succeed, and you can't ask more than that. But just to me, make or break. It's make or break. I don't know how long that leash will be because the offensive coordinator is not the head coach, so he's not the one who will make the call ultimately to pull this guy. And they've got some veteran presence there to kind of go, hey, you know, if we got a chance at making a wild card and Geno's, you know, having a bad time with things, well, then we can go out there and bring in a Ryan Fitzpatrick, who, although not a glamorous kind of guy, he's the kind of guy that can maybe get us to 8 wins to go to the playoffs because he's been in that situation before. Or even worse, let's say they come out the gate 0-4. Then are we talking about seeing Bryce Petty? Probably not. But sooner or later, we'll have to groom that guy if the Geno Smith experiment is going down. So it's New York. It's the Big Apple. Plenty to watch.
You know, I think it hurts the perception of this team going forward because you've got an offensive coordinator and a defensive-minded head coach already with a difference of opinion, which inherently means you're going to have a team that has a difference of opinion, you know, because there are going to be guys that side with Bowles, there are going to be guys that side with Chan Gailey. And, you know, I don't think that that's a very good thing for a team. I think that, you know, when you've got a rookie head coach and you've got a team that's got some veteran guys like this, you know, maybe some of the veterans aren't going to give that rookie head coach the respect he deserves. I mean, Bowles is a guy that's been around the league. You know, he deserves a certain level of respect, even though he's never, you know, been a head coach. But some of the veteran players on the team may not think that same way. You know, some of them may want to go young with Bryce Petty and say, hey, let's see what this kid's got. Some of them may want to go with Fitzpatrick, you know, who's more of a game manager that won't hurt you to the level that Geno Smith will. I think it's an ongoing situation that's going to really plague this team throughout the season, unless Geno Smith plays really well. You know, because in the back of his mind, he could go out there and post a 7-1 touchdown interception ratio over his first two or three games, go out, have a 3-interception game, and then he's back to looking over his shoulder already. And, you know, that's something that festers. It's something that lingers. I think it's a very bad thing for the Jets, and part of the reason why I think they're going to have such a down year, and I think the market's going to reflect that as well, because this is a team that a lot of people are skeptical of. There is talent. There is, you know, the potential to succeed. But you and I have talked about this countless times, used this expression numerous times on this show. It's a quarterback-driven league, and it's a quarterback-driven betting market as well most of the time.
Oh, absolutely. And by the way, I know it's our first episode, and we've already had some great talks and segues and whatever, but what I love about our back and forth is when we kind of have a difference of opinion, which to me is what makes this show great. We're not all yes-men looking at each other. And I think that's the case here. I think you're always going to have a split between offense and defense. That happens. And also from a Jets front office kind of feel, this is the risk you take when you take a guy like Chan Gailey, who's been a head coach, and put him in an offensive coordinator position, which is a smart thing, by the way. He's a good offensive coordinator. He's going to help this team. You and I talked about what a brilliant hire that is. So to me, it's up to Bowles to take this over, make it his team, make sure people know that. And I think they're going to be on board. Again, it's training camp. We're not going to blow too much out of proportion by him saying he's the guy, because let's face it, is there really a quarterback battle? No. I mean, they're not going to start Ryan Fitzpatrick. They're not. I mean, Geno Smith comes out and maybe throws 10 interceptions in his first game. Maybe. They might talk about benching him, but Geno Smith's going to get the start unless something drastic happens. So there's going to be that back and forth. There's going to be that us versus them. No way am I selling the Jets high. No way do I think they're going to have a good season. I think they'll fight for that basement position, and I think they're missing the playoffs again. But it's all about that development. I want to see that development, because it would seem like, you know, even you under center could complete some passes to Brandon Marshall and Eric Decker. So it'll be interesting to see how this all pans out once the season starts.
I don't think my hands are big enough. I've tried to pick up an NFL football before. That thing is like throwing a watermelon. How about the Houston Texans here? They're a team that has a good shot at the playoffs, in our opinion. You know, we talked about that back in May. I don't think either one of us has relaxed on that prediction. I mean, frankly, this is a team, if they got any kind of quarterback play last year, they're probably in the playoffs. What Bill O'Brien and Romeo Crennel did with this team last season was outstanding. Now they've got a bit of a quarterback dilemma between Ryan Mallett and Brian Hoyer. You know, Hoyer, a guy that Bill O'Brien's very familiar with from his time with the New England Patriots. So you would think he would have an inside track, but it really doesn't seem that way from what's gone on in Houston training camp so far. First things first, before I ask you a second question, who wins this starting quarterback job between Mallett and Hoyer?
Wow. You know, I want to answer that with just the one succinct answer. The problem is it's a really good battle. And full disclosure for anybody listening to the show first time, I'm a Patriots fan. So, of course, I love the Texans because it's Patriots South pretty much, you know, with Bill O'Brien and even Hoyer and Mallett. But I really love watching this quarterback battle. And I'll tell you why. Because Hoyer and Mallett are almost two different types of players. None of them has done anything great. Hoyer had a shot, of course, in Cleveland for a little bit, and it never seemed to work out, but he's an experienced quarterback. He's not flashy. He's a manager, so to speak. He can hit those short passes, and he can definitely bring a team down the field. But Mallett's the young guy. Mallett's the guy they want to see have a shot. He looked good with the first team the other day. He got in there. He got some reps. He's got to work on his accuracy. It's not good, but he's got a cannon for an arm. And so he can get some deep passes down the field, which, of course, is what not only the fans see, but, you know, teams want to see that too. So to me, it seems like it's Mallett's job to lose, excuse me. They want Mallett to take the job, but he hasn't been stepping up. And if you're Bill O'Brien, you think that you can win with both of these guys, especially because they have a solid running game. So you really don't have to do too much. that's been the question mark in Houston all this time. They obviously have a decent defense with J.J. Watt, and they're bringing in players all the time. If Clowney can stay healthy, you would think they're going to be good on defense, and they can run the ball. So that missing piece always seems like it's the quarterback, and I think that's why Bill O'Brien is taking so long to name a starter. I think he really wants Mallett to take the spot, and until he does it, they're going to stick with Hoyer. So it's fun to watch. To me, this is the best quarterback battle to watch this offseason, at least so far for me.
I think the nice thing about it for the Texans is that there's a different dynamic to this quarterback competition than there is with the one in New York, where, you know, it's sort of a competition in name only, you know, where it looks like it'll be Geno Smith's job, even though maybe, you know, Ryan Fitzpatrick and Bryce Petty would have more success. But here in Houston, you know, Hoyer's a new guy. Mallett's a relatively new guy. You know, so there aren't a whole lot of preconceived notions about these two. And I think that that's where a healthy quarterback competition is a helpful thing for a team. Whereas I think the quarterback competition, again, if we want to call it that, with the Jets, you know, I think is more of a harmful thing. Because here in Houston, you got Bill O'Brien, a tremendous motivator. He's been very, very good with quarterbacks throughout his career. So I think the team is going to have a lot of confidence in him to not only pick the right guy, but to also help that guy develop. You know, so I think in terms of this quarterback competition, it's a helpful thing. But what do you think overall? Are quarterback competitions something that's good, you know, because it breed that sort of, you know, fighting for playing time kind of spirit throughout the team? Or are they a thing that's harmful because, you know, it's going to divide the locker room? And, you know, if you're having a quarterback controversy, odds are neither guy is that great.
Yeah, well, it absolutely depends, and I'll give you two examples as well. This Texans one, I agree with you. I think it's a good, healthy competition, and I'll tell you why. Both these quarterbacks have faith in Bill O'Brien, and the team has faith in Bill O'Brien, so they know whoever he's going to put under center will do well, or else he'll make a change and he'll make it work. So I think this is good because not only are they getting a lot of time with both guys who could see a lot of playing time too, whether it's injuries or whatnot, but he's really giving it its due diligence. He's really making sure he has checked all his boxes, much like a Bill Belichick kind of approach to it. He's not going to come out and say, hey, Hoyer's our man. I think even when somebody wins this quote-unquote competition, it's not going to be a thing where he's like, he's definitely head and shoulders above the rest. I think it's going to be a very melancholy, yeah, we're going with him, but who knows. Now, where to me it's not good is a situation where you have a young guy, especially a franchise guy, and I'm talking Jameis Winston. Lovie Smith's already come out and said, hey, he's our starter. So why do you do that? Well, a couple reasons. I think that installs some confidence in the young guy saying, look, no matter what you do in this preseason, you're our guy. And I think it also sets the tone for the team, kind of like you talked about with the Jets. You think there can be a split if they go with two different quarterbacks. If Tampa Bay is not 100% on board with their number one draft pick, then why would the rest of the team be? So to me, I think that's where the quarterback competition would not work out. They bring in other guys or let your Mike Glennons of the world get in there and try to have a competition. I think that hurts, whether it's a confidence, whether it's a team believing in Winston. I think that's the case where it would hurt. But in this Houston case, I think it's a good thing.
Yeah, I think that's a very, very good point. And, you know, we'll see a similar thing with Marcus Mariota in Tennessee. You know, we'll see how that goes with Ken Wisenhunt, a veteran head coach, a guy that, you know, has generally had some success with quarterbacks in his career. You know, he was instrumental in the development of Phil Rivers out there in San Diego. Maybe not instrumental in the development, but in elevating Rivers' game to the level that it's been at the last couple of years. So, you know, those are definitely are two very interesting examples. And, of course, we'll talk more about Tampa Bay and Tennessee throughout the preseason, you know, because those are situations where the starters may play a little bit longer, at least the starting quarterback, in order to get them up to game speed. The final little preseason question I want to talk about here before we look at the Hall of Fame game briefly, and it's actually a very good segue into the Hall of Fame game because the Minnesota Vikings are playing in that game, and they've got Adrian Peterson back. And Peterson, of course, missed all of last season except for the first game of the year, you know, based on the suspension that he got for the over-the-top discipline of his son. But now you've got him back in the fold. You've got a second-year quarterback in Teddy Bridgewater, you know, who's probably going to rely on a veteran like Adrian Peterson. You know, do you think Peterson has support in the locker room, given how all of this has gone down, where he was suspended, the agent came out, said, we want out of Minnesota, and he kind of changed his tune? It's basically been a real-life soap opera here.
It really has been, but I'll tell you what, I think that's all water under the bridge, if you'll excuse the pun. But I don't I don't think it's going to matter. I really don't. I think what they want to do is get back to playing football. The NFL in general is a very forgiving kind of group of guys because it seems like they're always making mistakes as far as the player standpoint is concerned. Teddy Bridgewater would be a fool not to want Adrian Peterson in his backfield. Takes a lot of pressure off him, also gives him another weapon to utilize. Now, if anything, you know, Peterson's rested. He's older. He just turned 30. That's usually a bad sign for any running back, but he's getting the support. Now, a key thing to look at, especially if you're going to be handicapping games, is that from what I read, Peterson may not play down in the preseason. So they're going to have him rested and well ready to go. Another forgiving group is fans. If you start winning, Peterson comes out and logs 120 games that first game of the opener, I guarantee there's going to be a lot of forgiving fans. So I think everything is set up for him to succeed. It's just a matter of how easy he can get back into catching up with the speed of the game, remembering the fact that he's 30, and seeing the approach. But I like everything that Zimmer's done so far, and he's obviously a defensive coach, and they have a good defense. So to me, all the way around, a plus for the Minnesota Vikings.
Well, I think it helps here, and pardon the language for using this term, but it helps that Adrian Peterson's not a dick. You know, I mean, he's a guy that people have liked for a long time. You know, he has this incident. You know, he owns up to it. And, you know, really, I think his biggest problem while he was suspended and over the course of the offseason was that his agent really seemed to have no idea how to handle this situation. You know, it's kind of funny now because I'm pretty sure, and I'll correct this next week if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure Sheldon Richardson has the same agent that Adrian Peterson has. So at least he kind of got his crash course in damage control. But with Peterson, he's a guy that's been very well-liked in Minnesota. Everybody felt bad when he had the knee injuries. You know, when he's been out there, he's been exceptionally productive. You have a much longer leash if you're a guy that people like and endear, you know, as opposed to a guy who nobody really likes. You know, I mean, nobody's out there being sympathetic for Barry Bonds, you know, after all his steroid stuff and the fact that he'll never get into the Baseball Hall of Fame, at least probably not. You know, and it helps that Alex Rodriguez, you know, you look at a guy like him, to use another baseball example. He's a guy that everybody liked up until the suspension. And then, you know, he more or less owned it. He wanted to meet with the commissioner, whether it was financially driven or not, you know, whatever. It didn't matter. It was a sign, you know, in the general public's eyes that A-Rod was willing to rebuild his reputation. And now people like him again. You know, so, I mean, the general population is very fickle when it comes to sports. If you're out there and you're hitting 30 home runs or you're running for 1,500, 2,000 yards, it almost doesn't matter what you did in the past. And with Peterson, I think that that's going to be a thing. And ultimately, the fact that he's back really turns the Vikings into a dark horse Super Bowl candidate for me. I don't know if they can win this division going up against the Packers, but you know they're going to improve offensively. Mike Zimmer's a brilliant defensive mind. I have very high hopes for the Vikings this year.
Wow, a very bold prediction off the bat by you. Is not only a playoff contender, but a Super Bowl contender. Bravo for you. I agree 100%. And when you talked about him being likable or not likable, the first guy that came to my mind was Barry Bonds, too. You know, being a baseball guy, I was like, you're right, you don't want to be that guy. And not only that, but your A-Rod comparison is true, too, because he comes back, he's hitting home runs. The fans just want to win. What I really think was a good move, and people would actually question this, is that the Vikings used Adrian Peterson, a picture of him kissing his son, to promote Family Day. Now, some people went, what are you doing? Oh, my God, he's got in trouble for beating his kid, and now you're doing this, blah, blah, blah. Brilliant move to me, PR-wise, because what that says to me is that the Vikings are already past it. The Vikings have already forgiven him. The Vikings went, look at this guy. He made a mistake, but he's a family guy at heart. Come see our Family Day. Come join in. We've got his back. That's, to me, it said a huge message. Everybody was upset that they used it. You're not looking at it close enough to me. That's a huge thing. To me, that means if they're buying into him, and of course they literally are buying into him with a new contract, this is a team that can do some stuff. I agree with you. I'm not going to go as far to say Super Bowl, but I agree. They're a good team.
In fairness, it's a dark horse. I mean, they are a very dark horse, like a midnight black kind of dark horse. But, you know, the potential is there. So, got about 60 seconds left streaming live. If you are listening live, please download the podcast. Going to talk about the only NFL game in line that we have to talk about here very, very briefly because, you know, it's very hard with this first preseason game, the Hall of Fame game, between the Steelers and the Vikings. Vikings, 2.5-point chalk. Mike Zimmer, perfect 4-0 in the preseason last year. Mike Tomlin was 19-6 over his first, what would that be, five, 6 years He's just 1-7 in the preseason over the last two. So a little bit of that recency bias playing into the line here. These are always interesting situations with this Hall of Fame game. I think the biggest benefit to both of these teams is that they're going to have a fifth preseason game this year, so they can work out the kinks.
Oh, absolutely. And I'll go on a few side tangents that have nothing to do with this game because it is preseason. And look, I don't think there's anything wrong with betting on preseason. I know there's plenty of people that do it and make a pretty penny. I'm a bit hesitant to do so, especially the Hall of Fame game. But you got to look at the mindset of these teams. So what do they really want to do? For the Vikings, Adrian Peterson's not going to play. They guarantee you don't want to hurt Teddy Bridgewater. So I think on offense, you're probably going to be a bit vanilla to get things started. You're probably not going to see much from that end. Zimmer's a defensive guy. He's all about it. You talked about it, 4-0 last year. And if you look at Gruden, who was another young rookie coach, he was 3-1. So 7-1 combined for the younger coaches. Maybe that's something to keep an eye on once you go with the Todd Bowles of the world. And you're right, Tomlin started off a really good preseason. What's that?
Don't forget about Dan Quinn, too.
That's right. That's right. So to me, that's something. Look, these guys start a new season with a new team, and they want to start winning right away. So to me, that's something to pay attention to, and it kind of goes off from this game. But Tomlin likes to win, too. So to me, I love looking at coaches. I mean, John Harbaugh, 19-9 in the preseason. More importantly, they like to win certain weeks. How about Bill Belichick, 11-5 in week one, and then the rest of the preseason, he's about 500, 8-7, 7-8. How about Sean Payton of the Saints, 8-1 in week three of the preseason, but just 1-8 in week four of the preseason? And you brought that up. You got to look at each and individual weeks in the preseason because week four is a wash. I mean, no starters are playing in week four. So that's a different way to handicap that monster. And you already brought it up. Hall of Fame game is an extra game. So for the Steelers and the Vikings, their week three might be a week four, and their week four is definitely a wash. So all different angles you have to look at when you handicap. As far as this Hall of Fame game, from the Steelers, what I want to see is their defensive adjustments, their defensive changes. Their offense, to me, is going to be one of the better offenses in football. They showed signs of that last year. Le'Veon Bell dealing with suspensions and whatnot, but he got that reduced. He's, going to be a force when he does get in there. Obviously, Roethlisberger is a veteran quarterback. He's got plenty of weapons all over the place, although Martavis Bryant hurt his shoulder. Plenty of things to watch in this one, no doubt about it. I'll be tuning in, especially because I miss football. They could be playing at any time of the year. But from a handicapping preseason standpoint, start looking at those schedules. Start looking at those tough turnarounds. Start looking at those position battles. And start looking at those head coaches. These are things that can make you money in the preseason.
Well, from an X's and O's standpoint in this game, it's going to be a very interesting one because the Steelers, they've already had some injuries in the preseason. They got burned with the Marquise Pouncey injury last year. And Bruce Gradkowski's got a shoulder injury. He's not going to play in this one. Roethlisberger won't play. Even though the Steelers are going to be very well represented this weekend in Canton because Jerome Bettis goes into the Hall of Fame. So there will be a very pro-Steelers crowd for this one. But it's going to be Landry Jones and Taj Boyd. They're going to be playing at quarterback for the Steelers. On the other side, I think we see a little bit more of Sean Hill than some people are expecting for Minnesota because Bridgewater had the ankle problem last year. He's a mobile guy. You have to worry about him getting out, moving around. So I think that Zimmer and North Turner are really going to want to see what they have in Sean Hill here. Jerick McKinnon should get some reps since Peterson's not playing. If I had to make a pick on this game, and of course it's going to matter, what the coaches come out and say, and that's a very important thing to remember for our preseason shows here, is we may not have all the information from the coaches. We may not have the coaches, saying, Bridgewater is going to play four series, most of the first quarter, all those types of things that really help you determine what side you want to play in the preseason. But without hearing too much of the coach speak here, I think I'll have to look to Minnesota because Pittsburgh already with some injury problems, Ryan Shazier is dinged up. Jarvis Jones is banged up. You already mentioned Martavis Bryant. So I think that Mike Tomlin's only goal is to get out of this game relatively healthy. Whereas Zimmer, more aggressive guy, fiery guy, wants his teams to play physical. And I think that's why they were 4-0 in the preseason last year is because he stressed physicality from the beginning, and not a whole lot of NFL teams are doing that in the preseason.
I love it. I love it because not only did you give a quality pick, but you gave a good reason why, and you mentioned a few other things that you should watch for in the preseason. It's rotations, right? Quarterback rotation being the big one. That's like the starting pitcher when you bet in baseball. You want to know who's in there in the fourth quarter because that's where your money's going to be riding. The preseason also gives you different opportunities to try different betting options. You know, maybe if you know a quarterback's only going to play the first half, you do first half wagering. Now, live wagering is taking the world by storm. That's another way that you can maybe make some money in the preseason. But as far as this game goes, I have to agree. I really think the focus for Tomlin in this will be that defense. That defense was awful a year ago for the Steelers. So he wants that depth in there. He wants to see that improve. You're not going to risk too much on offense, especially from an injury standpoint. And you really know you're pretty much set from that standpoint. It's not like there's going to be a lot of competition battles for what's going on that side of the ball. You know, they'll probably, you know, bring in D'Angelo Williams for some reps to see him if he's healthy. And then because he'll have to take over for Bell early in the season. So you might see that. But again, those are veterans. Those are guys that aren't going to play late. Those are guys you're not worried about. They're really going to work on that depth. Zimmer sets the point. He sets the standard. He wants to win from day one, whether it's preseason or it's the Super Bowl. He wants to set that, you know, that basically the atmosphere that we want to win all the time, that we're going to play physical all the time. You saw last year that winning for him is important. 4-0. To me, it's going to be the kind of game that'll probably get boring, I'll say, for lack of a better term, in the fourth quarter, because there's going to be a bunch of guys in there you don't know. But if I was going to make a play on this game, and I am not, I, like you, would be taking the Minnesota Vikings.
Yeah, and that number from BetOnline, BetOnline has all the week one preseason lines out, so you know, you can go and check those out. Next week, we'll have a lot of things to talk about. We'll be back on the air on Tuesday. We'll have more games to discuss because there is a handful, looks like six of them on Thursday, then some on Friday, and then some on Saturday, and then one on Sunday. So we'll be discussing some of those games because there are some very important topics in the preseason that you want to pay attention to, and then, of course, things that will carry over into the regular season. We'll talk more about some handicapping methodology things next week, looking at key numbers, you know, consensus betting percentages, all those types of things. We'll start to give you, you know, what we like to call our handicapping 101, you know, segments that we like to do in the preseason so that, you know, because as Cole said at the top of the show, you know, this is really for education and informational purposes, you know, to help you become a better sports bettor, you know, through some of the things that we've had trial and error with, you know, through the ways that we break down games, all that type of thing. So, you know, Cole, it was fantastic to get back on the air with you. I really missed this over the summer, and I'm definitely looking forward to another great season.
Oh, absolutely. I couldn't wait for it. And the first show was awesome. I can't wait for many more. And again, I'll piggyback what you said. We stress educating the better. And look, it doesn't matter if it's your first time betting on football or if you've done it for years. We try to go out of our way to either find, you know, a unique stat or a unique angle or a unique approach to looking at games. We're not handicappers. We're not selling our picks. Don't get me wrong. We want to go undefeated every week because we like to have bragging rights, especially when you and I disagree. So we get at it, and we do our best to put out winners each and every week. But it's really about giving you guys, the listeners, the information, the ammunition, if you will, to have a successful betting football season.
So do it for us today. Make sure that you listen to the Gregorian Gambling Report throughout the preseason and the regular season, aiming for Tuesdays this year. The Bettors Box, my MLB betting podcast, every Monday and Thursday here on the Bang the Book Blog Talk Radio channel. But we'll have plenty of great stuff for you throughout the season. So for Cole Ryan, I'm Adam Burke. Hope you enjoyed the show, everybody. We'll talk to you again next week.